Wiltshire. Welcome to the Village Oak Tree. I'm your host, Terrence O'Donnell. It's been about 48 hours into the new Trump presidency, and the chaos is already getting started. I don't want to get into that too much, as every media outlet across the world will be doing that for us. Instead, I want to talk a little bit about the whys of what we're seeing across the world. I can't even begin to scratch the surface, but I do want to pay particular attention to the United States today and why they've been trying so hard to subjugate the world for the last more than 100 years, especially since World War II. Once I've offered everyone my take on all of this, using journalistic articles and a couple of YouTube videos I found, I ask everyone to stick around to my commercial break so I can read you another chapter of The Priest from Michael Campy. So come sit you down next to someplace warm and listen to me tell you what's going on beyond the mainstream media with a broad perspective on things you aren't being told. My first set of stories come from Europe. I've had one sitting in my queue for a bit now from Kit Clarenberg from the UK. I've talked before about how badly undermanned and under-equipped the U.S. military is, which is why they continue to fund and push other countries to do their dirty work for them all over the world. Proxy wars, for example. Examples are everywhere, and this has been going on since 1948. Proxy wars using CIA and MI6-backed militias and bullying smaller governments to fight wars for them and been going on since the 1950s. Vietnam was pretty much the first, and it's been ongoing ever since. In Kit's article, he tells us about how the British military is on the point of near extinction with severely undermanned armies and navies, lack of equipment, and so on. They don't help themselves when they openly talk about sending troops to Ukraine. They don't have any military to send, so why would they even think about it? The answer is the United States. They are once again doing the bidding of the U.S., like the other NATO countries of Western Europe. The U.S. is putting a stranglehold on them, and they aren't being left with much choice. Toe the line or face economic ruin, which may be coming anyway, whether they go to war for the U.S. or not. Trump's tariff threats are wreaking havoc everywhere. Europe is caught between a rock and a hard place. The current governments are trying to hold on to power, but the people in Europe are pushing back with strikes in Germany and France, and governments are collapsing with no confidence votes, right-wing political groups gaining more and more seats in their parliaments. I read yesterday that the current German government is considering an outright ban of the AfD party ahead of next month's elections. I wonder how that will play out with the voters there, given their popularity, especially in Austria. I read an article in RT this week about how Slovakia's President Fico may be on shaky ground. I hope I pronounced his name right. His pro-Russian leanings have angered Brussels lately, and the EU Council may decide that enough is enough and do what they can to get rid of him, replacing him with a more pro-Western leader. We see what happened in Georgia last year when the EU and the U.S. pushed real hard for a pro-Western leader. They're still mad about it there. Will that happen again, this time in Slovakia? Will that scare more Eastern European countries to lean harder towards the Russian Federation? Trump is giving off an air of indifference as he continues to promote his America First agenda for his presidency. And for any of those world leaders who don't want to play along, he's dismissing them as irrelevant, like Britain's PM, Sir Keir Starmer. He's acting like he expects other world leaders to bow down to him, as if he were the Emperor of the West, like the Pope in a Holy Roman Catholic Church was back in Europe's medieval days. Now, of course, the Kremlin is objecting to any further military involvements in Ukraine. So what will Britain do? Seems that Britain and the EU Council in Brussels will need to make some hard decisions very soon. They can continue to suck up to Trump, or they can grow a pair and do what's right for their people. If they let the U.S. continue to bankrupt them, there'll be a lot more no confidence votes ahead, and the political landscape in Europe may change dramatically, leaving the U.S. out in the cold. What if the EU decides that they can't rely on the U.S. anymore, which is starting to happen? What if the European people tell our new governments, no more? We have to come before the Americans. This means that Europe would have to find new, more lucrative trading partners, which means Russia, China, and the BRICS alliance these days. Africa is kicking out all their European colonizers these days, so they're not much of an option anymore. What if the EU were to move away from the US and start trading with Eurasia a lot more? Would the US sabotage more oil pipelines in revenge? They're already doing all they can to try and control the oil in the Middle East. The US wants to shut down all the oil pipelines going from Russia to everywhere by any means possible. The BRICS alliance is putting a crimp in the US plans for global domination, and they don't like it. Russia and China are building a massive oil pipeline between them, which the US will not be able to stop. But what the US is trying to do is set up a maritime blockade around China's east coast to choke off all shipping, especially oil. China's fighting back without using their expensive military, but it's becoming quite the struggle. The US is bullying other countries, like Canada, for instance, into falling in line to punish China, which will hurt them in the long run. Other countries around the world have been and are dealing with local militia uprisings funded by the US CIA and their Western allies, all to try and choke off China's economy, according to a new independent source I found. As the EU struggles with its existential questions, they're getting hit in their collective economies left and right. The loss of cheap Russian oil and gas, artificially created by the US, in order to sell them their more expensive hydrocarbon products. The threat of heavy export tariffs from Trump, to the Russians now shutting off beef imports over an outbreak of hoof and mouth disease. More and more trade deals are going south for Europe because of the U.S. Not that hoof and mouth disease is the fault of the Americans. Or is it? I wouldn't put it past them. With massive deindustrialization happening in Germany due to their over-reliance on their automotive industries, and the U.S. markets, France agriculture tax woes, and loss of trade with their former African colonies, and many other issues that the people are angry about, governments will be changing over, and maybe not in a good way soon. With the rise of the extreme left and right political groups taking over more parliamentary seats across Europe right now, it's only a matter of time before Europe stops being so dependent on the U.S. They really won't have a lot of choice. This may seriously shrink their economies in the short term, but maybe strengthen them in the long term as they learn to stand on their own without the U.S. What will the U.S. do? What they always do, threaten to or actually impose economic sanctions. In Trump's case, he'll threaten to pull out the American military support, which he may do anyway. He threatened to leave NATO the last time he was president. Will he actually pull the U.S. out this time? He started right away with the media pulled out from the World Health Organization and one of his many executive orders this week. There may be more coming, since he promised to pull out of the Paris Climate Accords once again. There's a lot of talk about Trump's desires to annex Greenland, take the Panama Canal back from the Panamanians, and force Canada to become the 51st U.S. state. From a global dominance perspective, this all makes sense. The U.S. wants to control the Arctic Circle. They don't want Russia and China to have access to all the mineral wealth buried under all that now rapidly melting ice up there. Not to mention creating another maritime blockade for Russia and China, especially China. The U.S. wants to control the passes of ships through the Panama Canal and maybe the Suez eventually in order to control the flow of oil and trade goods between China and the rest of the world. You see a pattern here? As someone famous once said, if you control all the oil, you control the world. The U.S. has been trying to control the flow of oil around the world since the oil embargo of 1973, mostly in the Middle East, but in South America and Southeast Asia as well. The recent spats in Venezuela being a good example. With the rise of China as a serious global competitor, the U.S. has decided that since they can't take on Russia and China in any head-to-head military battles, they'll use a strategy called asymmetric warfare. The strategy consists of bullying little and not so little countries with economic threats, funding militias with money and arms, and using disinformation to convince them that it's in their best interest to take over their duly elected governments in order to curry favor with the U.S. Why do you think the U.S. supported the Taliban and ISIS when it suited them in the past? Why do you think they're supporting the Kurds in northern Syria right now? Why have they supported certain militias in the Americas, Malaysia, and other places? All to push their global dominance. Something that's not working out so well for the U.S. anymore. These failures in places like Malaysia, Myanmar, Southeast Asia, Iraq, Afghanistan, and likely Ukraine this year only infuriate the neocons in the U.S. even more. They don't like to be told no. They don't like to be told they can't have something. Will this happen to Greenland and Panama? Will the rest of the world step in to prevent Trump from taking over sovereign nations just because he claims it's for America's national security? Which is why they're doing all they can to choke off China. As far as they're concerned right now, the worst thing that could have happened to them was China's entry into the World Trade Organization, which they facilitated back in 2001. It doesn't matter to them that a lot of American corporations have made billions by moving their factories to China the last 30 years. The neocons can't allow any serious global competition to their plans for world domination. A lot of that profit has now been diminished as China finally stepped up in recent years to demand better pay and benefits from those Western corporations using Chinese labor. The days of cheap labor are over in a lot of Chinese factories. A lot of other Western companies are now starting to pull out over concerns of forced labor in Xinjiang province from Uyghurs. Between the trade wars, labor issues, and pressure from the U.S. government, a lot of Western companies are pulling out of China. And China is asking them to stay. They want Western investment to keep their momentum going. No one knows how all this is going to eventually play out. It's becoming a war of economic attrition, with the U.S. and its Western allies doing all it can to choke off trade to China by any means possible. China is fighting back with their own economic tactics. At risk is whether the U.S. can actually create enough trade choke points around the world to squeeze China into submission. Can the United States afford to manage all this? That's the big question. The U.S. is so far in debt now after funding all this unrest around the world in the last 50 years, it's becoming a real problem within its own borders. People are very angry because their standard of living is taking a nosedive. Their infrastructure is breaking down around them, and climate change-induced extreme weather is creating massive hardships everywhere on the continent. People want to change for the better, which is why they voted for Trump. He promised them better, which he's not going to deliver. We're already seeing that as he takes over the White House this week. His blatant seating of the world's wealthiest people in the front row of his inauguration was an in-your-face slap to the poor people who elected him. He has backed off on a lot of things he said he would do in order to get elected, such as ending the war in Ukraine quickly, getting a lasting ceasefire in Palestine, Lebanon, and Syria, immediate massive deportations of illegal immigrants, and bringing the factories back to the United States. The Russians will dictate the terms of the war in Ukraine, not Trump. The ceasefire in Palestine won't hold for more than a couple of weeks. Israel will not pull out of southern Lebanon as asked by the new Lebanese president, and Israel is going to set up a permanent presence in southern Syria. Once Israel starts bombing everyone again in a couple of weeks, what will Trump do then? Israel is only going to serve its own interests, so they'll play along with Trump for now, long enough to get back all their hostages. They'll be back to killing as usual again. That hasn't stopped the Israelis, though. There's already a report that an IDF sniper killed another child in Gaza, and Israeli settlers went on a rampage in the West Bank to protest the ceasefire, burning cars and houses. Trump has already removed the sanctions on the settlers, so now it's open season on the Palestinians on the West Bank. In Syria, the new government is powerless to stop the Israelis from stealing whatever they want. In this case, water, according to one report I found. For Israel, it's about the Greater Israel Project and tricking the U.S. into supporting a massive attack on Iran. Trump isn't buying it so far, but as mercurial as his temperament is, who knows what will happen in the near future. With the U.S. sanctioning everything Russian under the sun, the Russians are doing a pretty fair job of getting around those sanctions for now. Their so-called maritime shadow fleet has been doing pretty well in evading Western sanctions, even sneaking Russian oil into Canadian refineries using transfers to other countries, according to a report in the CBC. It's not just Canada, but other countries like India are laundering Russian oil being brought in by their shadow fleet and reselling this refined petroleum products around the world, especially to the Europeans, for a much more inflated price. With all this going on, there's been a huge uproar over the freedom of speech in the West. We all know that China and Russia do not have any First Amendment rights to freedom of speech and other freedoms that Americans have taken for granted. Now, it seems the secret is coming out slowly in the American consciousness that the First Amendment rights of freedom of press, freedom of speech, freedom of peaceful protest are no longer free. The Fourth Amendment is being ignored and so on. The banning of TikTok has brought all this to the forefront. Over 170 million people in the U.S. use TikTok. The recent ban has fueled an uproar over the loss. Another Chinese social media app, Zhonghongshu, translated Little Red Book in English, has jumped in users over the last few days. They're the closest thing to the familiar TikTok platform. There's speculation on the indie channels about how long that will last. Will the U.S. ban that one also? What the Americans are not being told is the real reason the government wants to ban the app in the U.S. According to multiple sources, the real reason is because they're not willing to restrict what people are saying. The U.S. government doesn't want their citizens using social media to support the Palestinians, the Russians, or the Chinese, something that Meta and ex-Twitter are more than happy to offer the U.S. government in order to avoid bans or anything else. Any social media platform that wants to operate in the U.S. has to meet government censorship demands. Since ByteDance refused to give in to the Biden government, they were set to go offline last weekend, which they did for about 12 hours, until Trump stepped in and promised a 90-day stay of execution. So, TikTok is back for a limited time until things get worked out, one way or the other. Of course, you know that Trump's and his cronies are going to want it to be benefit them and not ByteDance. So, you know, in 90 days, TikTok may actually be gone. This is how the U.S. government operates. Civil rights freedoms are for those who are loyal to the government. If you don't wish to conform, you'll be sanctioned or eliminated. It's, you know, as far as economically speaking, if anyone protests against something the government doesn't want them to, they'll send in the militarized police forces to disrupt their lives. This has been going on for decades. The latest were the pro-Palestinian college campus protests, were largely eliminated last year. Then there was the dismissal of the Muslim community solidarity with the people of Gaza by the Democratic Political Party that likely cost them the election. There will be more, you can be sure. Trump is just getting started. The United States can't afford to have any social media platforms operating in the country that allow free speech, as they're afraid of stirring up any more civil unrest than they already have. I have news for them. That ship has sailed. The unrest is already there, and it's not likely to go away soon. The wealth gap is just too wide now. Nothing Donald Trump can do, even if he were inclined to, will change that. What he needs to worry about now is what may happen once all of his lies start coming out about how he's going to fix the country. Some of them are starting to already appear. Now that he's officially the president again, the mask and gloves have come off and the chaos is beginning. Will Trump use the security apparatuses at his disposal to monitor every bit of social media feeds to go after any dissenters? As one YouTube commentator mentioned this week, will they deploy the Israeli spyware called Zero Click on people's mobile devices to spy on those they suspect of dissension without them knowing about it? Warrantless monitoring of people's computers and mobile devices has been around since George W. Bush signed into law the Patriot Act back in 2003. With Trump replacing the Border Patrol on the southern border with military troops now, will this carry over into the streets around the country soon? Will Americans start seeing APCs and military uniforms patrolling the streets of the United States soon? Will there be checkpoints set up between all state-to-state border crossings in the name of this so-called invasion of the illegal migrants? If Trump and his cronies do get away with all that, will the people rise up and carry out a modern-day French Revolution to clean out all the one percenters and their rage against the wealthy elites before the end of Trump's term? Will the Chinese and the BRICS alliance prevail in the economic trade war with the West? mostly with the U.S. in the next few years? Or will the U.S. government devolve into a fascist oligarchy with Trump, Musk, and the other tech billionaires at the helm? Which, given what the world witnessed at the inauguration on January 25th, may already be underway. Think about all this as I take a break before reading the next chapter of The Priest, Michael Campion's dystopian fiction about what the U.S. may look like after a collapse. I want to take this minute to explain how you can support this podcast and advertise my book. The podcast is free and can be found on these major mobile podcast apps, on my YouTube channel, and my Substack page at Crown of Beha, the Tree of Life at Substack.com. To help defray my cost, I'm asking for donations of any amount so everyone has an opportunity to watch or listen to this podcast anywhere in the world. I set up a donations tab at rss.com on the Village Oak Tree and on my website at www.crownofbeha.com, and I'll link to PayPal for your security. This way you can use any currency you wish from around the world, providing PayPal is available to you in your country. So now let me tell you about my book. Fugitives in the New United States, which can be found on all major online book retailers around the world, comes in hardcover, paperback, and ebook version. You don't want to wait for them to print you one. You can also buy a hardcover or paperback edition from me directly through the bookstore page of my website, and I'll ship it right out to you. This is a dystopian fiction about what the United States might look like by 2031 under a Christian theocracy. It's full of drama, action, and romance, set against a backdrop of U.S. societal collapse. The story follows a trio of resistance fighters as they navigate across Upper New England in their quest to escape from the authoritarian regime. So that's all I have here, and I appreciate any effort you can to support this endeavor that I'm doing, no matter how small it may be. Thank you very much. Welcome back. So like I said, let me read to you another chapter from Michael Campion's The Priest, formerly known as Bob. This is chapter 23. Seligman in Sunset. I had started a list of the top 10 weird and useful things about the apocalypse, and I had a look back in my notes to see where I left off. I was at number 5 on the weird things list and number 4 on the useful things list. I had just come up with a combo plate. So number 6 on the weird list and number 5 on the useful list is how fast humans just vanished. It was weird because there had been 8 billion people on the planet, and it was useful because there was no longer 8 billion people on the planet. There had been areas that began to become uninhabitable before, and now they were. I think that's what must have happened in the desert southwest. It got way too hot, way too fast, and people either died or left. I did wonder how many of them died, because that would have given me a good benchmark. And if I could determine how many of the people left were female or male, then I thought I would have a chance of figuring out if I would ever find a girlfriend. I thought I wanted a girlfriend. Maybe just a female that thought like females due to balance out the tiki, stuffy, and dolly experience. I don't really know how females think, but I'm pretty sure it's different from the way males think, which could be good or bad, depending on how their mindset had changed after the collapse. I'm sure that you're asking yourself, how has this intrepid band of rascals managed to stay alive in a largely uninhabitable region? The desert southwest had been abandoned, and had been abandoned quickly. The good part of that was there were still a lot of things that were intact and not raided. Water was actually almost easy to come by. Toilet tanks provided a pretty consistent source. Even though the creeks, lakes, and rivers had dried up, you could always find a toilet with some water left in it. It wasn't the best water, but it never made any of us sick. The same was true of food. There was something edible in every home and hamlet that we passed through. Dolly was getting a little nervous as we approached Seligman. There was nothing to indicate the presence of the unseen enemy, but he cautioned us to stay watchful and be ready to react if there should be any contact. "What exactly do you mean by react?" I asked him. "Be ready to fight," he said. "Just for clarification, you want us to be ready to fight the people who killed 15 men in Ash Fork?" "Yes." "Okay." "Good," he said. "We need to stock up in town. because the next stop on our tour is Vegas. No, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not, he insisted. Kingman is where we're turning north. I completely forgot about Kingman. Aren't you glad you have me? Most of the time. It will take us about 8 days to get there. There's no telling what we'll find. Las Vegas was one of the first places to get unlivable, so we have that going for us, he said. We're all still on edge because of the Ash Fork thing, which upset me because I didn't want another traumatic experience to add to the collection I had already had. Collecting trauma is not a hobby I would recommend. The worst thing about it is that it's accumulative. One trauma doesn't displace another, it just piles on top. I had no idea if humans had an upper limit, but I've been told that most people had a 3-trauma capacity, and then they just broke. It did occur to me that maybe there was some tipping point where we become able to handle more than the previous 3-trauma max. Maybe it was like adding memory or something to computers. We could just open up some space and to squeeze in a little more. That brought up the question whether there were other things we needed more than trauma, that were being pushed aside or thrown out to make room for more trauma. That brought up the question of what was the upper limit of our storage capacity. Could we add capacity, like adding more cloud space? Or would things just start spilling over? Maybe we had a psychological function that would automatically add space, or maybe there was something that would evaluate what we had stored and then discard anything that was no longer useful. I think, after all this thinking, that I'm going to stick to the last bit. It makes the most sense. It would be like warp speed evolutionary process. The same thing that humans did to animals in the old world. We would keep making incursions into their lives and habitat, and they would have to adapt to the new situation quickly, or they would die. Most of them died. Some of them didn't. I'm hoping that the ability to adjust to a rapidly changing environment is something that we all had originally, but it had gone dormant, and that is stress enough we could wake it up. Oh, fuck, there I go again, thinking again. I hope that I would eventually get over too much thinking and be able to stay on task without a lot of crap downloading itself into my brain. Maybe it's not automatic. Maybe we still have to work at getting our brains to behave, not go off on some rambling journey without even asking for permission. At some point, I'm going to need a massive infusion of some mind-altering drug to make sense of this. So that's all I have for everyone today, and I appreciate you joining me. Thank you for listening to the show. I hope you enjoyed it and you'll return again to talk about the world we live in. Please like, subscribe, and reply. Share the videos and the audio podcast, however you watch or listen. The goal here is to resist the people who want to take our freedoms away from us. I appreciate everyone around the world, no matter who or where you're from. Together, using independent media like this, we can resist the authoritarian oligarchs in the West. As I say goodbye this week, I wish to leave you with this Irish blessing as we go about our lives and try to stay warm in the meanwhile. May we find the will to resist those who try to put the boots on our necks. Slán go fóill.